You've never been lost until you've been lost at 2,200 miles an hour. At 9 o'clock at night, you go to bed for crew rest, take medications as necessary. We were certified for uppers and downers legally, and if you needed them, the flight surgeon would dispense them for you. You wake up at 5 o'clock in a BOQ at either Mildenhall or Okinawa. You meet in the hallway, and you get in your car, and the first thing you do is go over the mission. On this mission day, and I don't have a laser pointer, but what we're going to do, if you see the word England, where that D is in England, that's about where Mildenhall sits, real close to where the D is. We're going to take off out of England and fly due north and off the coast of Norway, about right where the N is in Norway. We're going to refuel. That's where the tankers are. After we refuel, we're going to go about 200 miles on the refueling track, and then we're going to start the acceleration up above the Arctic Circle. We're going to swing north to where that 30 degree east number is, and right at the Barents Sea, about right where the B is on Barents, if you went due south, that's where Murmansk sits. And we're going to skirt the coastline, we're going to image it, we're going to do a 180 degree turn, come back and image it on the way back out, back down through the Arctic Circle, descend, refuel, and come back to Mildenhall. Before every flight in the airplane, whether it's training or an operational mission, you have to eat a pre-flight meal. And for us, it consisted of steak and eggs at that time. They call it a high-protein, low-residue meal, and for obvious reasons. So that's the pilot and the RSO eating their meal before the flight. The mobile crew meets there as well to go over any last-minute instructions and have the meal just in case they're called upon to fly. You have a little briefing just to make sure everyone's on the same sheet of music as the attachment. You have about a half hour briefing. Then you go down and get suited up for the pressure suit. Here they take your physical. It's a very small mini physical. They do your blood pressure, your temperature, your pulse. They record what time you went to bed, what time you woke up, what your last meal was the night before, record your weight. Eyes, ears, nose, throat, make sure your sinus cavities are okay. If you pass the physical, then you can go fly. This is like your last chance inspection for the pilot and RSO, and both of you had to pass. And we had a few guys that, you all know what the white coat syndrome is? You get close to a doctor and your blood pressure goes up automatically. We had a couple guys that had that happen, and the blood pressure is too high and they couldn't fly the mission. Then you're going to get suited up about 6:50 now. The suit's already been pre-flighted by the physiological support personnel. Put your long john underwear on, which this gentleman has here. Put your feet into the suit, stand up. They bring the zippers up and start zipping you up. They hand you the helmet, and you fit the helmet out over your face and let it sit on the neck ring, and then they lock it in place on the neck ring. Once your suit is on with the helmet, you go to these overstuffed reclining chairs and they put the testing equipment on you. You can see the leads going into the suit, that little tabletop, it has a tester on it, and that's where they check you for leaks. Each suit's about 125 grand. Every crew member had two suits. You had a primary and a backup. If you leaked too much, you still had time to get in your backup suit and get the mission accomplished. The thing he's carrying out there, the gentleman in that picture, that's called a liquid oxygen converter. It's got liquid oxygen at the bottom, and it's converted into gaseous oxygen at the top, which is very cool, and it comes up that hose. You can see it traveling up, and where it enters the suit, right here on the left-hand side of his suit. And that's where he then can dial in whatever cooling temperature he wants inside a suit. Tubes inside the suit go all the way up to the fingertips, all the way down to the toes, very, very comfortable inside the suit. It weighs about 50 pounds. 7:15, you're driven out to the plane. The backup crew's already been out there. The pilot's already pre-flighted a front cockpit. The navigator has been in the back. He's pre-flighted the back seat. When you get in the cockpit, you're right at the start engines checklist and you're ready to go. If there were any discrepancies found, the crew would get in the van with you here and they'd talk to you about it and see if it was a small enough right up, you can still go or not go. Climb up the steps into the cockpit. step inside. The PSD people will go ahead and get you all mated up with the ejection seat. They'll make all your straps and connections. They tell us when you go through training, they want us to just put our hands out on the platform and let them do all the work. If you try to help them out with any of the connections, all you do is get in their way. So we just stand there like this, and they make all the connections with the ejection seat, your oxygen, your face heat, pressurization, everything is mated with them. Your life is basically in their hands. If they miss something on the step, a critical one, and you had to eject, it might be a bad day for you. So you had a good sense of reliability. They went through an extreme checklist, a challenge and response. And I always sat there when they did it. I always listened to make sure everything was being accomplished. 7:30 now, we're a half hour before start, or takeoff. We'll start breathing 100% oxygen. From then on, all the way till shutdown, we'll start the engines in the hangar. 20 minutes before takeoff, we'll start our taxi out. Follow the mobile car. He'll lead us out to the runway looking for fog. At the end of the runway, we do an engine run up. Full 100% military power on each engine for 1 minute while it records all the parameters. 2 minutes before takeoff, you get a light gun signal. We did everything radio silent, never talked to a soul. In about 1978, we adopted radio silent procedures. Up until then, we were talking to ATC, and the National Security Agency came down from Yokota, Japan, and said, you guys are giving away the farm at Okinawa because all these Russian fishing trawlers all around the island, they hear all your call signs and they're relaying it to all the other communist countries of what your takeoff time is and what your call sign is. So we went radio silent about 1978. So we look for a light gun signal. The mobile car gets on the runway, clears for FOD. The airplane taxis into position about 2 minutes before the takeoff time. Right on the hack of 8 o'clock, you release the brakes and start racing down the runway. Nose wheel steering, stay down the center line. Light the afterburners, start coming back on the stick about 180 knots. You get airborne at about 210 knots. Let me back that up. You lift off at about 210. Want to get the gear up as quick as you can. You can see that in that picture, it's in transit as soon as you break ground. Accelerate to 400 knots on the climb out and just hold a 400 knot constant airspeed climb and you'll be at 25,000 in about 2 minutes. All our subsonic cruising anywhere, our best fuel consumption was always at 0.9 Mach. So that's where we went cruising at 0.9. Start looking for the tanker now, rendezvous with him. That's the tanker navigator station aboard the KC-135. He's been up there 30 minutes before, he has to be in the orbit 30 minutes before your arrival. So he's been up there, he knows the wind drift, he's got it killed, and he's finding a perfect racetrack pattern, and he tells that aircraft commander when to make his final turn, and all we do is just bore in at 0.9 Mach to this common point in space we call the air refueling control point. So we're heading right for this air refueling control point, and he's flying, and he makes his turn, and we roll out 3 miles in trail. And from then on, we just keep the speed disparity, and we close up on the tanker. There's looking up through the windshield of the tanker as you get in close. Get into the pre-contact position. From then on, the boom operator, he'll tell you to stabilize, and he takes the elevons, and he then flies the boom for the contact. And the jaws lock on with hydraulic pressure. They lock the boom in place. Pass gas at about 6,000 pounds per hour. Refueling took about 15 to 20 minutes. You took on 80,000 pounds of gas total. That was your total fuel on board. Once you get your full load of gas, you clear the tanker either to the left or right, and then you light the afterburners and you start your climb and acceleration. This climb is at 450 knots, and we climb on out at a constant airspeed and just hold 450. And I tell all pilots that if you could hold 450 knots, and if you could get to 71,000 feet, I guarantee you, the charts come out, you will be at Mach 3. It's just the way, it's a fact of life. So we held 450 knots all the way up and actually decreased it to 440, 430, 420, and 410 when you reach 71,000 feet. Level off Mach 3, about 71 as I said. There's some sample temperatures. I don't know if it shows up very good up there, but you can see the representative temperatures all around the airplane. Most of them are in the 500 degrees. There's a couple 600s, and there's one right over the engine. It's 1,050. And that's all from skin friction. The temperature at about 80,000 feet is minus 70 degrees already outside, minus 70. And so these are the temperatures that it will heat up to at cruise in that 70 degree minus atmosphere. Now we're going to approach the sensitive area. And the sensitive area is defined in our flying as that airspace where anything and everything could happen. You may see MiGs trying to come up and get you. You may see SAMs fired at you. You may see nothing as a ho-hum mission. You just never know. But the sensitive area is where you get this keen sense of awareness because things can happen. The sensitive area, and again, I don't have my pointer, but it starts right up around the Finland. As you come around that dark area you see on the map, it's coming around to Murmansk. That becomes a sensitive area right then. As you enter the sensitive area, all our sensors and the AstroTracker, the ANS, that's our navigation system that triangulates off the stars and looks for the stars, it has to be working 100%. If they weren't, you abort and come home. The autopilot had to be on. You cannot humanly fly the airplane smooth enough where you won't degrade the imagery if you try to hand fly it. So we always had a hard requirement that when the sensors were working, you had to have the autopilot on. You get quiet in the cockpit. Dawn and I always went to hot mic now, so we stay very focused and we could talk immediately to each other without going to cold mic. Crew coordination is very important, and that's why we always fly together, for like I did for 7 years with Dawn Emmons. We knew each other intimately. In fact, our wives always said that we knew each other probably when we knew our own wives, because we lived together so long away from home as opposed to being at home. And it becomes real important. I could say to Don over the interphone, say, oh my gosh, well, just by the inflection of my voice, he knew that that's nothing major. So just by knowing each other very intimately, it becomes very, very critical. And that's why we maintain crew coordination. Pay attention, increase sense of awareness. I'd be watching outside for SAMs or MiGs trying to come up. A lot of the MiGs knew that they couldn't come up and get you. It'd be very futile for them, but I will guarantee you, a lot of cases, they were waiting down at higher altitudes of 25 to 30 to 35,000 feet, hoping we had some emergency or some minor malfunction that required us to come down subsonic. Because if we had to do that, we were dead in the water. There's nothing to prevent them from shooting us down. So that's why the reliability of this airplane is very important. Even though you have that comfort of Mach 3 and 80,000 feet, this airplane has to run. If that oil pressure goes to zero, guess what you're doing? You're coming down. You can't fly at Mach 3 or Mach 2 with one engine, so you're coming down right into their altitude. If you lost the hydraulic pressure on either of the flight controls, you were coming down. So there's a lot of scenarios where you may have to go down into their regime, and they're just waiting for you. They're salivating down there, hoping something will happen. Dawn in the back has some good ECM, electronic gear. He can tell if they're locking on and launching on us with radar missiles. Reconnaissance is done. We've come back out of the sensitive area, and we're starting to swing down. You do two things. You either go to a tanker, get more gas, and go to some other part of the world, or you can get a little token offload and then come on back into Mildenhall. Every time I went to the sensitive area, I always thought about this sign that used to hang over operations door. It's very comforting to be up there at 80,000, 85,000 feet. I've been up to 87 quite comfortably. But again, if something goes wrong with the airplane, you are coming down. But that was a little motto we had hanging in the 23rd Psalm with a little modification. Other places you could go from here, take on a load of gas. You could end up going into the Baltic Sea. We would take a little bit of gas off of Norway, refueling, and go into the Baltic Sea and do a counterclockwise turn in there, doing all the Warsaw Pact countries back when they were part of the evil Soviet Empire, the Warsaw Pact. Then you could get another load of gas, and we could go into the FRG in Germany and do a clockwise turn in Germany, imaging all the Warsaw Pact countries around Germany, and then come on back into Mildenhall. Ever so often, we had missions that took us all the way down into the Mideast and Arab countries. We'd go all the way down through the Gibraltar Straits, into the Mediterranean, refueling and go through the Arab-Israeli area, come on back out, back to Mildenhall and return.